Yeah, seems to be working.
Just waiting for. Okay, yes, it is recording now. So welcome everybody. I'm here just, you know, to drop in as I'm the Hyperledger point of contact for the public sector working group or special interest group. And I would like to kind of introduce, following Rose's introduction last week, two new chairs, because Rose has been very busy and asked that we let her go for a while. I'm sure she'll be participating in the community and in the groups, but she is out of the country for quite a while now. So this from now on, the two people that will be leading the group for the next 3 months is Hannah Norberg, whom you've met definitely, and Alfonso Gavella, who also has been a very active participant in the group. After 3 months, if you will feel like, you know, we need to change something, we have kind of, this is the test period, and then we will extend it to a year if the group agrees. So with those introductions, I will just quickly read out the antitrust policy notice and hand over to Alfonso. So Linux Foundation meetings involve participation by industry competitors, and it is the intention of the Linux Foundation to conduct all of its activities in accordance with applicable antitrust and competition laws. It is therefore extremely important that attendees adhere to meeting agendas and be aware of and do not participate in any activities that are prohibited under applicable US state, federal, foreign, antitrust and competition laws. Examples of types of actions that are prohibited at the Linux Foundation meetings and in connection with the Linux Foundation activities are described in the Linux Foundation antitrust policy available at www.linuxfoundation.org/antitrust-policy. If you have any questions about these matters, please contact your company counsel, or if you are a member of the Linux Foundation, feel free to contact Andrew Updegrove of firm Gesmer Updegrove LLP, which provides legal counsel to the Linux Foundation. Also, I'll kindly ask all of you to adhere to the conduct which is available on our website. So, welcome again, and Alfonso, please take it from here. Alfonso, just in case, you're muted, so we can't hear you if you're speaking.
Okay.
Oh, here you go.
Thank you. Thank you. I was trying to stop sharing my screen. Welcome, everybody. Bear with me. I'm new in this role, so I've been a participant, but not a chair. So bear my learning curve. I'll eventually get there. Okay. Welcome, Bobby. No, and welcome, everyone. The agenda for today is to present what we have been doing at the white paper subgroup. I think that would give us an opportunity to continue what Rose talked about last time, where we are, where we come from, where we want to go. Also, there is the opportunity of presenting this as an abstract by the end of September so that it can be included in the next Hyperledger concourse. And the second point in the agenda is, how can we engage more local stakeholders to participate in our group and to explore the potential that Hyperledger offers for public sector. So I touch base with Sean and with Bobby, who have been extremely helpful on both of those two issues. And I would like them to speak, Sean first, about what we've done in the white paper subgroup, and then ask Bobby to share. She has a very good a very interesting experience during the summer with the Princeton meetup group. So that's the introduction of the agenda.
Okay, Alfonso, do you want me to step in?
Please do.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Sean O'Kelly. Give me a moment while I attempt to share my screen. Let me see here. Okay, can you guys see my screen?
Yes, I do.
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. And so you have to excuse me. I normally enter the Confluence site from the mobile app. And so I'm entering it here through my browser for the first time. So Bobby, I'm wondering if you can help me navigate to our page.
Sure, no worries. If you go up to the top Hyperledger logo.
Yeah.
And click that, or I'm sorry, go to the right of that and click spaces.
Okay.
And space directory, you would look for our public sector space, which is probably on page 2. And once you've been to the page, it shows up there in the dropdown. Your most frequently visited. So this is like the only time you'll really have to go find it.
Okay.
Select.
This is it.
Yep. So again, it'll be in your dropdown of spaces from now on. And then our white paper workspace, if you expand that, you'll see that most of our, the first page, if you click on the white paper workspace, that's where we've been keeping our agendas and recordings for our agendas for our, meetings, and then the recordings obviously are on the recordings page, and then the actual white paper is that white paper tab.
Okay, so let's go there. For everyone else on the call who's not hasn't participated on the white paper working group, you just got a little tutorial on how to find our stuff. So. So thank you, Bobby. Okay.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I'm like soaking up every second here.
And just to interrupt for a second, the way it's set up is that basically what you're scrolling through is the introduction to the white paper, and then section 2, section 3, but section 4, all the use cases have their own tabs to work on separately. So that's why there's those additional. And then down here, underneath the 4 use cases, is just a workspace that I didn't want to delete when I was structuring this because people had put information in there. And then a blank template for use cases that we're working on in the learning materials working group. So that when you want to make sure that you have all the points in your use case, you could go to the template and see that outline and maybe pull a topic or two that you might have missed. That's all.
Okay. So thank you, Bobby. So what I'll start with is just walking through a couple of the highlights of the white paper outline, which is kind of right here on it's the first thing you see when you come to the white paper space. I'll focus mostly on section 1 is the introduction. I'm not going to really spend too much time on that. But then section 2 is really the meat of what we're saying is the scope of blockchain in the public sector. So that is in effect what I'll spend most of my time talking about today. And then section 4 is our example use cases that we've picked out and we're starting to build out. So really where we're at is we spend a lot of time really building out section 2 and defining what that is. And so up until really essentially within the last 2 weeks, we've probably spent 6 to 9 months. I don't remember the exact time frame off the top of my head, but somewhere in that range of building out section 2. Now, you only see 4 points under section two. So you might think, why did that take 6 to 9 months? And the answer is that when you talk through these things and you end up talking through lots of scenarios and lots of examples and use cases, you end up, it takes a while to kind of, as you churn through those examples to get to the common themes in all of them. And so, it took a while for us to kind of coalesce around this, but I think that this is the essence of what exists in the public sector space. And so really within the last 2 weeks, up until about two weeks, maybe a month ago, we spent most of our time coalescing around section two. And then really within the last, within the last 2 to 4 weeks, we started building out use cases. So now that we feel pretty confident about the themes that exist in section two here, we're now going to build out representative use cases. There's almost an endless number of use cases that could have been selected. So we're largely just going with what our different expertises are or our different areas of focus are, so that we can each contribute to each use case in a in-depth way, but also a meaningful way. So with regards to section two here, really what we have are the first 2 points are really the two main components, and then not to minimize the third and the fourth points, but those are points that almost help support the first 2 points. In effect, there's really two things. There's identity and then what we're calling interactions. On the second point of interactions, we've used a couple different terms there. We've used interactions, we've used highly regulated transactions, we've used compliance transactions, we've used regulatory compliance, we've used several different terms there, but when you hear us talk through it, it kind of, we're referring to a lot of the same thing. So I'll start with identity and then we'll talk about point number two. So identity is this idea that with regards to public sector, in order to effectively for a government or a not-for-profit or even a highly regulated entity like a utility company, for instance, in order for any of those organizations to know that something is true and to participate in ensuring confidence that something is true, there has to be some, the government or the public sector entity has to be able to identify the thing that people want trust around. And it's for that reason, that specific reason, that the public sector space is getting so much attention around blockchain. And that's because, so when we talk about entity, what does that mean? Try to think about it in its broadest sense. It's the identity of an individual, certainly, but it can also be the identity of an entity or an organization, such as a business or a not-for-profit or anything. Would have an identity associated with it. But then go broader than that. Once you get outside the realm of identifying an individual or an entity, you have the identity of things of value. This is the blockchain is allowing an extension of what already happens in the real world. So you could take a currency, for instance. If you pull out a dollar bill, and please tell me if this is too elementary for anybody, but I'm just trying to give the right background here. If you pull out a dollar bill and look at it, it has a unique serial number on it. That's assigned by the government. So the government knows that specific dollar bill was issued by the government. And if they don't find, if they find some other serial number that they can't identify on a piece of paper that looks like a dollar bill, then they know it's a counterfeit. So the blockchain is allowing for an extension of that in the digital space, so that you can issue currencies that have a digital identity that can't be tampered with. And so you extend the trust that might exist in the real world on a piece of paper to the trust in the digital space with regards to currency. So now you extend that even further out, and you can extend that to almost anything. You can extend that to, if you go beyond currencies, you can extend that to a security, an issuance of an equity, for instance. You can extend that to a piece of property, to real estate. So that you can identify a piece of real estate in the digital world. You can extend that to a unit of energy. And so once a unit of energy is produced, you have an identity associated with it. You can properly track it, trace it, price it, and extend it to the activity in the real world. So when we think about identity, we're thinking about it in its broadest sense. And as we really started, as we spent a lot of time talking through any number of scenarios, you ultimately get to this idea that in order for there to be participation from the public sector in the blockchain world, it all has to start with identity, whether that is identifying an individual, an entity, currency, security, real estate, and so on and so forth, unit of energy, unit of supply, any unit of supply, really. That could be cannabis, that could be agricultural products. And so once you identify something, then you get to point number two, the interactions piece, or the highly regulated transaction. And so the second point is where you have traceability. And that's really, in the end, what I think governments are interested in. So for all kinds of public safety, public health, public good kind of reasons, you want to be able to trace certain things through so that you can ensure that whatever outcomes you're trying to motivate in the public's in the real world, that those outcomes are that you have traceability around the activities that you need to drive those outcomes. So what does that mean? Let's just take an example of, and again, it all starts with identity. So let's say you identify a unit of energy, and in the public sector, there's obviously a big public safety reason and public good reason to make sure that people are receiving the energy that they need to receive in their homes and in their businesses. So what you want to be able to do is first identify that unit of energy somewhere at its origin. And then you want to be able to trace it through so it doesn't literally mean you're surveilling it end to end necessarily. It really just depends on what the law says about what needs to be captured and where there may be issues. You want to be able to quickly identify where those issues are occurring in the delivery of that unit of energy. So laws are different and depending on how things work in different locations, you may have different points where you want some validation that unit of energy was not only generated somewhere at an origin, but that it was that it was then sent for distribution, that it was received by the party that was supposed to receive it, and that it was actually consumed by the party that was supposed to receive it. And that's just one fairly simple example of where the government has an interest, or in public sector, you have an interest in making sure that energy is going to where it's meant to go to. And so you have some regulatory oversight associated with that. And so you can extend that kind of thinking to almost anything that needs to be traced. Again, it's not necessarily meant to be a full surveillance of a certain thing from end to end. It just depends on how the law is written in that particular geography. So in financial services, you have, certainly have KYC, AML, anti-predatory lending kind of concerns. It doesn't mean that you're tracking every last bit around a certain loan transaction, but it means that at where it comes to money laundering, knowing your customer, or predatory lending, that you have the right touch points that you can trace it through. So it starts with the identity of, in financial services, it would start with the identity of the financial institution. It would start with the identity of the borrower, and it would start with a certain identity of that particular loan instrument, and then you can trace that through at that point. So it's really for, and you just start, you end up finding, and I think I used the analogy in one of our conversations a couple of weeks ago, that it feels a little bit like high school algebra, where you have all these variables that start out on both sides of the equation. But as you start talking through scenarios, you start finding that you're eliminating variables, and you kind of get to some fundamental core variables. And so identity and the highly regulated transaction or interaction is really what a lot of these scenarios kind of come down to. So I know I've probably only got a few minutes left, so I'm not going to spend too much time on the third or the fourth pieces under the section two here, regulation or governance. We can get into that maybe when we have a little bit more time and we want to go into more depth, or you can join our white paper working group where we can go into more depth on those. But I will spend a few minutes just quickly talking about the use cases that we have landed on. And so we've picked out four, but like I said, there could be any number of different use cases that could have been selected. The first one is financial services. So we're focusing on lending. So I kind of talked about that scenario already. We also picked out energy. So again, I already started talking about that scenario. Around real estate, we've selected land registry and land markets. So Alfonso has a really nice background there, and he's helped driving out that one. And then finally, we've got grant management. So I haven't talked about this scenario yet, but any kind of government disbursement is a really good another scenario where you start with an identity of the recipient of a certain government disbursement, and then you want to be able to trace that through to make sure that intended recipient actually received and was the consumer of that particular disbursement. So a disbursement you can think of in its broadest sense. That could be a retirement benefit. It could be a healthcare benefit. In this case, it could be a grant. And that's what we've selected here, is to go with a grant to make sure that any money that's coming from the government for R&D or investment purposes is going to the place it was meant to. So disbursements in general are a very broad category, and grant management is one example of a disbursement. So with that said, I'll probably stop there, because I think I'm probably at time. I think Alfonso only wanted me to spend maybe 15 minutes or so. I will take one more minute though and just go through a couple of our visuals, just to show everybody, if you want to see a little, some visuals of what we've done. So I believe those are down here. Here we go. Okay. So, so maybe the thing I'll start with, maybe the most important one, we have a couple different visuals, but this is one of the ones that I think is our, one of our key visuals is this, is this public sector mind map that we call it, which Alfonso really did. We talked about it in one of our meetings, and then Alfonso expanded on that and built out a really great visual for people to see. So maybe this one will launch. I can't get it to launch. I'm not sure why it won't launch.
That's probably my fault. I think you might find it under the workspace.
Oh.
I'll check why that link doesn't work, but if you scroll down in the workspace, it might be somewhere.
Okay. Okay. Here we go. Okay. So a couple different visuals here. We have the two visuals here. You've got the mind map, which I'm kind of pointing at right now, and then right below it is you've got our concentric circles with the mind map in the center. So ultimately, these pictures are meant to work together. But I do want to, and the concentric circles is meant to just show how there's the four layers of identity, interactions, regulation, and governance, and how they're meant to all be layers in the same cake, so to speak. But I do want to focus on the mind map, because I think this is a really one of the most interesting visuals. And so what you've got here is, in general, public sector being right at the center here, you have four branches of public sector that we've identified. There's public administration. And so our four examples, our four use cases, we've picked one use case that fits each of these branches. And that's maybe the most important takeaway. So for government and regulatory compliance, the yellow branch at the top is really where bank loan example would fit. Under public service, this is where utilities, among all these branches here, this is where utilities and energy would fall. So that's where that example is associated with. The blue to the left is where, among all of the branches that you see here, this is where grant management would fall. And then finally, down at the bottom, this is where the land registration component of that's where that particular use case would fall for government. So around helping to manage, public or just helping with land management. So I wanted to point all that out to everybody because we have four branches here. And so our use cases, we have one use case that fits each branch. And that's the thinking behind that. I mean, we could go into endless numbers of use cases. We're going to just try to focus on four. And then allow people to dig, certainly to go deeper where they want to go deeper. I think the idea with the white paper is that once we get beyond some visuals and our outlines, we will actually start drafting it and putting a straw man together. And then certainly we would want feedback from the larger, from the larger public sector working group to provide feedback on the work we've done. So, but certainly anybody, if they're interested, is welcome to join us in our white paper subgroup. So, with that, I'll stop and see if there are any questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sean. As always, you are very clear, and you make us understand what the issues are about. I think that it's been quite an impressive work to be able to synthesize a sector as complex and with so many branches as the public sector into the basic equations, algebraic metaphor that you're using. I think the formula is correct. We have IT, we have interactions, and regulations and governance. But I think that coming up with those ideas is the key contribution of the group, of the subgroup to this group. I'd like to hear what the rest of the crowd thinks about it.
So let me maybe start. I think, Sean, that this is as Alfonso said, this is very clear, very interesting approach. There are a lot of very good things in your presentation. And I think that once the paper is ready, it will be really, really valuable to the whole community. First question that I have is, how do you see in general, because you are a very strong but fairly small group of people that is working on it, as I understand. So how do you see, where could the public sector broader group help you out? Do you need some inputs from the governments, for instance, from public institutions, where we could, having our network of people around us, maybe find someone to interview for those things?
That's a great point. I think that is certainly something we've talked about. You're right. I think our typical group is five people or so in the white paper working group. So we definitely want broader feedback than just the five of us for sure. And I don't know that we have an exact path forward on that yet. Alfonso, I don't know, or Septarchi, I don't know if you guys have a point of view, but I think it's definitely something we recognize, but I agree with you. We're going to want broader feedback, but the mechanism in which we do that and how we do that, I don't think we know how what the best mechanism is yet. So any ideas there? Certainly open to ideas.
Hi, this is Saptarshi. So I think the first point will be to get it, kind of a verification or something where Martha and the other team members in the public sector who are participating regularly go through what we are doing, how do they feel about this, good, bad, or anything they would like to share. And if we can, consider their viewpoints, suggestions, and incorporate. And then if we can consider guys who are working in the relevant disciplines, let's say for our use cases that we have chosen, who are working in the specific disciplines and may have a look into how we have projected, considered the values in the business of, functional aspects. And if they feel that this is really connected to how they, in their day-to-day activities or in their operations, feel that this is somewhat they would like to see as a change. So that could be a potential start, as per my opinion.
Thank you, Saptarshi. And yes, Hannah, it is very useful what you are suggesting. How do we engage a broader audience? And not only in regards with the white paper, which is key and vital, but also in regards to this group. Okay, how do we bring in more people that are interested in the day-to-day operation, okay, that are at the trenches, okay, or people that are in academia thinking about it, or businesses that are already benefiting society through their own services. And in that sense, Bobby, you've done a great work the learning materials special interest group. But I thought that your work this summer with the meetup group points out towards another direction, complementary of what Hannah is suggesting of interviews and what Saptarshi is also suggesting about incorporating real practitioners. Would you tell us about your experience?
Bobby is raising her hand, so maybe we should first let her speak.
Hi, I just wanted to talk about when you were mentioning how to get attraction to this group. I think that in a couple of the other meetings, we had floated around the idea and hit on it, and I kind of want to like make it concrete. I sit in on a lot of the special interest groups, and I have to say this one has the best by far presentations. And I know it was mentioned somewhere before about that, I forget the term, maybe Sean can help me, a live exhibit or almost like a live trade show. Was that the term they used?
I don't recall, but yes, let's roll with it. You've just coined a new term.
Yeah, so it was
I think the term is ongoing or ongoing conference or something like that.
Yes, yeah. So our wiki page has some of the best presentations I've seen anywhere. And if we can possibly get that almost to be the attraction for people to come, I mean, cut them out of, I know some of them are just the PowerPoints, but some of them are built into our recordings. But if we could somehow use those as the attraction to get people to the group to say, see, look at all these great things that have been happening. And then, you know, use that as the hook to get them, because those presentations that we have are fabulous. So that's just my opinion on how to get more people into, you know, validated. If they see what we've been up to, maybe that will be the attraction.
Well, one thing to think about too is, you know, we've, and I didn't mention this in when I gave the overview, is we've tried to incorporate other working groups that we know of that are out there, and bring them in and have them present. So I think a couple of weeks ago we had Drummond Reed from the Self Sovereign Foundation, which is doing quite a bit of work around identity. So what we want to be careful of is not recreate the wheel between what the self-sovereign identity group is working on, as well as Hyperledger Indie and the work that's going on around the actual technical architecture for identity. So we want to be able to I wonder if that could be of interest as well, as when people realize that there's quite a bit of crossover here between the frameworks and tools that are being built within the larger Hyperledger greenhouse, as well as other groups like Evernym and Self-Sovereign Identity, that this, you know, this concept of identity is going to touch basically everything, and it's certainly there's a thread of that, a strong thread of that runs through the public sector as well.
Yes. How can we broadcast these two issues? I mean, the ongoing conference and the crossover of tools and frameworks, Sean and Bobby. How can we broadcast that to a wider audience, at least within Hyperledger and outside?
Well, I think the first avenue we could go through is the Technical Steering Committee's quarterly reports, because there's a huge amount of people on those calls, the Technical Steering Committee calls, and when it's the public sector's time to present the quarterly report, I think that if we have a wiki page already set up with those presentations, and that's something we showcase during our Technical Steering Committee quarterly presentation, you'll get a wide audience eyes on that. So I'm not really sure when this is due.
Yeah, so I'll answer that question. As of several months ago, special interest groups fall under the governing board and not under the technical steering committee. Technical steering committee felt a bit overwhelmed.
I forgot. Yeah.
So we won't have quarterly reviews. Of course, anybody can propose topics or for the agenda for a technical steering committee. We can email the mailing list and ask TSC to review what we are doing. I think that first step would probably be kind of reaching out to our network. And, you know, we all know people in this space that might be interested in working with us or joining and so on. The second thing is, I think that should be probably an appeal from Alfonso and Hannah, is to, if you could identify speakers that we could reach out to and ask them to present. Because, you know, you've seen something that is interesting, the wider community should know about it. And, you know, chairs will figure out how to contact that person, but we need to have topics and ideas for that ongoing conference. And the third thing that I wanted to throw out there that Alfonso was hinting at is Hyperledger Global Forum has been announced, and it will be in March 2020 in Arizona. And what we were thinking was that maybe the group should think about submitting a talk proposal based on the research that you've done up until now. So, of course, you know, it would be nice to have the use cases done and everything else, but even the sheer thought of the process of how do you evaluate those things, do all the background that you've seen, like the state of the art aspects of it, this is already a great presentation. So I would highly encourage you to look at the call for proposals. It's up on Hyperledger website. The submission deadline is September 27th. So there's about a month from now to write up the proposal. It doesn't have to be backed by a paper.
I'm glad you said that, Marta. I was actually just going to suggest that to the group, that I think we do consider doing a talk of some kind at one of the conferences. And I think this could be a group, you know, it could be a talk that maybe one person gives, or it could be a talk that maybe a couple of us give, where we go up and talk, you know, we talk through different pieces of the work. But I think that would be a great way to get to start getting the work that we've done out there, as well as get our voices out there a little bit. I'm a really, really a big fan of that idea.
Definitely.
Okay. Definitely. So, well, I suggest that the next thing we do is we create a task force, if you will, the core 3-4 people who would like to write up the submission for the Hyperledger Global Forum, and then present it to the group, and then we can, you know, submit it once the group agrees. So we probably need 3 to 4 volunteers to write it up.
Here's one.
I guess I can also contribute to that.
You can count me in.
I was on mute, sorry. Yes, I'm definitely a big fan of this idea, so I'm in too. My only caveat is I'm traveling and won't be available from the 7th through the 14th of September. So basically I've got next week that I can work on this, or it'll have to be when I get back. My wife and I are traveling. We're doing a hike of Yellowstone, and we will be off the grid entirely.
Wow. That sounds pretty cool. So I think that a week from now, having a first draft, you know, at least the points that we want to include in the proposal is quite doable. And then, you know, the review process will start and kind of fine-tuning it. So I think that we have a group. Of course, I will be happy to support you and help you with kind of reading through it. And we should start there, I guess.
I added a page on our wiki for the task force, and I'll put a table on there for people to sign up.
Great. And I guess, Alfonso, it would be great if you could write an email to the mailing list for those of our people who did not join the call today, summarizing what was the idea and how can we move it forward.
Sure.
Great.
I'll do that.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you know, personal ask to every one of you here, and if someone's listening to the recording, then also to you. Please identify speakers. Let us help you learn more. But we need speakers and ideas for talks.
Definitely. I also think that this ongoing conference and this hook, as it was referred, should be open to the meetup groups. There are 170 local groups all over the globe. If we could show them what we're doing, you know, and listen to them, that might be another way of complementing the broadcasting.
That's a great idea. The way to do it is to send an email to meetups@lists.hyperledger.org, which is a mailing list for all the meetup organizers. And if we can write up an abstract saying, here's a presentation that we collectively as a private sector special interest group that we can create or do, and please let us know if you're interested, and then call for speakers from those groups for anything interesting.
Good.
If you email me, Alfonso, I'll let you know what the exact email address is.
Thank you. I will. We have 10 more minutes. How would you like to...
If you don't mind, I could show you the results of my meetup for the summer project.
Please do.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen.
Thank you, Bobby.
Okay, which screen are you seeing? One or two? The one with the presentation or the one with the slides?
Not able to see, Bobby.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, here we go. How about now?
See. Yes, now we can see it.
Okay.
Yes.
So quickly, I'm just going to go over. Alfonso was talking about the meetups. And from the Learning Materials Working Group, what I tried to do, because I run the meetup in Princeton, was I tried this summer to do a project. It was very successful. So what I hope to do is replicate this in the other meetups, or have this like as a package for meetups to use if they need ideas. So here's how the project went. It was a summer project. It wound up being called the Giving Chain. And let me see if I can do this. So it is completed. We finished it on the 25th of this month. So who we are? We are, there's three different groups in Princeton that meet for blockchain. One is my group, which is an education Ledger Academy. The other is Hyperledger Princeton, which is the Hyperledger meetup group, and then just a regular Princeton blockchain and AI. So the three groups got together all summer. We dedicated countless hours. We met every week for hours to work on this project. So I cannot believe the team I had was fabulous, and the support we got from this community was also great. So we came up with the idea of a giving chain to have a positive impact in our area this summer. So how we did it, my mouse is a little slow here. First thing we wanted to do something socially responsible. So we looked at blockchain and social responsibility and the five forms that took. And it was either, you know, philanthropy and remittance, financial empowerment, identity and land rights, government and democracy, and supply chain. So we worked on the supply chain aspect of it. And our goals for our project were to create a project from start to finish, using blockchain, that did something positive in our area. With the team that we collaborated with, we wanted to learn new tools, which we did. And we built this project so we could replicate it. So we have checkpoints and working groups and recaps. That's basically the structure of the project. And we created a giving chain called the D2R app, and it's a new model for charity giving. We've been invited, we entered this, we were talking about public sector. The big apps had a blockchain challenge, which we entered in this summer. And although we did not meet the three criteria, which were energy, identity, and real estate, they had another category that we entered, and we won an honorable mention and get to show our stuff at their demo day, which is very interesting for us because, again, these folks here are all from the mayor's office. This woman is in charge of New York's digital identity program. The mayor ran on a platform that every New Yorker will have ID by 2020, because right now New Yorkers don't drive, so they don't have driver's licenses, so half of them don't have IDs. They carry around their birth certificates or their passports. So the New York State is trying to get identification programs in place. This gentleman's in charge of all the real estate. This one's in charge of all the energy. So it was very interesting, the call they have for help from the blockchain community. And it's going to be interesting. I will give a report on the Big Apps Blockchain Challenge and the other companies when we get closer to that. So again, this is our giving chain. We wanted to reach out our hand and use blockchain. So this is the logo, and we'll talk a little bit about how that works for the business model later on. So how did we do it? Again, we worked through these checkpoints. Again, we don't have much time, so I'm going to go pretty fast. These six checkpoints, each one comes with about 10 questions we had to answer that helped us fine-tune our project. So we, again, our meetup met all summer long. It was incredible the amount of support we had. And we, after checkpoint one, this was our solution. We were going to develop an agile and transparent network for connecting food supplies and supplies to communities in need to impact the local charity giving model. So our business model in checkpoint two looked like this. We would have donors that consisted of farmers, individuals, and community and church groups, tracking their donations on a blockchain to the drivers, who could be local church groups, individuals, or anyone with a truck, to the recipients, which were, in our case, it was food banks, and we found individual U.S. veterans that were homeless in our area, and we found a way to get them some supplies as well. So that was the business model we came up with. And again, in checkpoint three, they had to come up with the technical architecture. We use Sawtooth. I'm not going to click this because this is the Sawtooth explanation from Hyperledger. But we did use Sawtooth, and we were able to fork the code in the example and come up with a one instance on a single node. Yep, we don't want that. So the technical architecture kind of looked like this. The individuals would get together with the donation bags, or we call them giving bags, fill the giving bags, and with their user interface, the D2R2 app, the donor side would initiate a pickup. And that would create a tag that would initiate the driver that the bag was ready to be picked up. The driver would pick up the bag, accepting it with his app, the D2R2 for drivers, which would create another tag for the transporters. Then this tag is the acceptance tag for the people who are getting the produce at the end. They have an app that they would, once the driver alerts them, they would accept the giving bag and tell the driver where to go. And then the giving bag would wind up where it was supposed to be, all being tracked on the blockchain. So that's how the technical architecture looked. The next checkpoint was business development. And again, I know Saptarshi's on the call. He helped us out a lot. We worked with A-List, Gymnastics Unlimited, the Flemington Food Pantry, Ledger Academy. And we developed a company which we're filing a nonprofit for called BC Princeton. And you can check that out online, see what we're up to as we develop. So the business development solution was we ordered 100 giving bags, and since we did not have the resources or the time to create user interfaces, these tags and other tags that followed the bags were basically our simulated user interfaces. So we did get 100 bags. And we developed alliances with youth groups. This is ALIS, which is leaders, youth leaders of United States. So it's the Alliance of Young Leaders of the United States. And this was the Princeton group. Summer fundraiser at the local gym, the little gymnast and their families got together and collected food. That was a great project for them. And again, local farmers donated their produce. So we brought the giving bags there and filled them up with whatever we wanted, which was very generous of the local farmers. But if you've ever been in New Jersey this time of year, there's a lot of excess produce around. So that was an easy call. We printed up these donor marketing materials that we put in places, other collection places. So they were randomly popping up. Everybody took one in the group and put one at their local church, or I had one at my local feed store. And again, the recipients, we had to build business relationships with them. So we went to the local area food pantry. Their shelves in the summer were basically empty because a lot of the schools have programs to fill them, and the schools have been out for the summer. So they really needed help, and they had this list of donation suggestions. So that's basically what we focused our efforts on. This man's name is Rooster Featherstone, and he knows where the off-grid U.S. homeless vets are in our area. So we just gave him 30 bags that were we packed with food, soap, toothbrushes, shaving cream, anything that like one bag would be able to sustain someone for a while. So that's how that worked. And then the product development again was on that single node sawtooth, backing up with this diagram. So if we go through this very quickly, I know we only have 1 minute left. The donors look like that. We had the bags with the tags. The tags were broken off depending when they first left from the donors, and then when they were at the recipient, these tags served as the collections. The data points we collected, each 10 bags had a page. It showed you the hash of where the owner was and what was in the bag, and then it got transferred. Each one of these sheets had a sheet for the driver so that when this transfer happened, this sheet stayed with the smaller parts of the ticket, and the driver got this receipt with the 10 bags. So a driver could have 5 bags if they had 50 bags in the truck. So again, there were 10 sheets, 10 tags that went with each sheet, that went with each bag, and this is what the back end looked like. So that is the ownership hash, who had the bag in the beginning. And then the bag was created, the donation was created for the bag number. Now we move very quickly to the driver's view. This is the data points he needed to collect. His ticket had his hash on it so that when he came possession of the bags, that ownership transferred to this hash. And again, depending on how many, depending on how many bags, you can see how that bag gets transferred. The donation can get accepted. And that was that other piece where the driver had to figure out where it was going. And this is what the back end looks like of that. And then finally, the recipient blockchain view, which is when we pull the last tag off, and that's when the recipient receives the donation. So again, here's just some pictures of the event. I'll go through these very quickly. These are little gymnasts. We created a mural with everybody's hand who was involved, because it's the giving chain and the logo was the hands. Again, this is the food bank. This is the mural we created.
Hey, Bobby.
Yes.
This is Sean. I mean, if I know we're kind of at time, could I make a quick comment?
Sure, please do.
This is such a wonderful example of another type of disbursement in the broadest sense of what a disbursement is, where you have, you know, in those threads we were talking about earlier, where you have the identities of the donors and the recipients and any intermediate parties that touch these donations. And then you have the traceability all the way through. And so this is such a great example of when we talk about public sector, where the government doesn't necessarily need to be the one building and owning every blockchain that exists that they have an interest in, but it's an example of how you just that traceability and transparency provides the oversight that the government is interested in. And this is such a wonderful example of that. So when we talk about public sector, it doesn't, you know, I think it's it doesn't necessarily mean that government has to be the one building every blockchain. It could be a collection of organizations that participate in a blockchain like this one, but it still provides the, you know, the transparency so that you get the oversight that's needed to make sure that the things that are donated are actually received by the people that were meant to receive them, right? That's what the public sector interest is.
And that's where civil society comes into, which is part of public sector. I agree with you. It's a great example. It's a great, great example.
Thank you so much. So that's basically, and hopefully we'll be able to do something where the meetups can take this package and build their own project through their own checkpoint answers and questions. Or, you know, if we get some backing at the Big Apps blockchain challenge, we might be able to build this out and have it just be a decentralized giving model that, you know, the local charities can just tap into, because some of them already have vans and have locations. They just, you know, the people really want to give just don't have a system to know how to do that. So thank you for humoring me. And I know I brought us a little over.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think
that was so worth it to go over. That's a fantastic project. Bobby, thank you so much for sharing it.
And we would like to continue, but we don't have the time. And that's always good. You know, we wish to continue. So we can do it on the next 2 weeks, if everyone agrees. Thank you very much for your
Sounds
participation.
Great. And thank you, Hannah and Alfonso.
Have a great weekend.
Hey, have a great weekend, everybody, and thank you for amazing presentations, and I'm really looking forward to creating the task force and working on finding some speakers.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Happy Bye-bye. Weekend. Bye.
So now is the time to push, stop recording.
Yes. Well, we went through our first, Hannah.